Good evening. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Steve.
Hey, Steve.
You know, I want to thank Kevin for asking me. I don't know. After tonight, we'll see if I'm still your most favorite speaker for the next 5 weeks. We'll see how this goes. Now, I was talking with Mark a little bit on the way out here, and you know, and I told him I had to be. Before I come up here, I got to say a little prayer, and I got to turn this thing over to my God. You know, and I always ask Him to let the message be His, and the words be mine. And in an environment like this, in a format like this, I should say, not an environment, I have to be really careful that I make sure that I keep my ego out of here, because this isn't about anything I'm going to, you know. I'm not a gifted circuit speaker or anything else. I'm here simply to share my experience, strength, and hope on these steps as I see them and as I know them and as I've read up on them. Everything I have to offer is a direct result of everything I've learned from a great sponsor and people like you in these rooms. So I need to always make sure, you know, I say that first and foremost, because, like I said, that's more for me than anything. I have to make sure I stay on top of that. The other thing that I always say is the most important thing that I'll say from this podium tonight, I already said, and that's I'm an alcoholic. You know, I need to remember that first and foremost, no matter where I'm at, no matter what I'm doing, no matter what I'm saying. Excuse me, because if I forget that, I'm in a lot of trouble. I can forget my name, I can forget where I live, I can forget a lot of things, but I can't ever forget that I'm an alcoholic, and I'll always be an alcoholic, you know. So anyways, three other things I always need to mention real quick, and that is I have a sponsor, I have a home group, and I have the sobriety day. And those are three vitally important things in my sobriety today. My sponsor is Andy Daniels. He's been my sponsor for quite a few years now. My home group is Thursday night, Grape City Group. It's an open speaker meeting in Northeast. It meets at 8 o'clock tonight. If I get out of here in time, I'll shoot right out there and I'll catch my home group. And I picked up a second home group. That is on Monday night, and it's a big book and 12 and 12 reading and discussion group. And I love that meeting because I love this book and I love these steps. And it's my way of life today. And my sobriety date is July 15th. Of 1989, so just a little over a month ago, I celebrated 30 years of continuous sobriety. And I'll tell you what, to anybody new, anybody coming back, man, all I can tell you is just one day at a time. It's amazing, you know, how that time adds up. But so tonight, anyway, I'm going to try to tell you in a general way, anyway, as general as I can, and still use up as much time as I can. You know, how I see this, how I take my take on this. And you know, the AA's 12 steps are so simple. It's amazing. They're not easy, but they're simple. And it's a beautiful design for living. That's what I've always been told. I was told that right in the very beginning, that these 12 steps, that this book, that this fellowship, this program is a design for living. And that's exactly what it is. The steps are definitely, excuse me, numbered for a reason. And to me, anyways, it's pretty amazing how one step leads into the next. And, you know, you can't give away what you don't have. And that's steps 10, 11, and 12. You can't really mend any wrongs. And that's 8 and 9. Before you realize your character defects, which is 6 and 7. Which you learn about yourself through a thorough self-inventory, and that's 4 and 5. That derives from the initial solution, a higher power or a God, of my understanding, realized in steps 2 and 3. And all this is after first identifying the problem. And that, to me, is step 1. They don't go from 12 to 1. They go from 1 to 12 in a reason, and for a reason. And it's pretty amazing, like I said, if you really get into a 12 and 12 study group, and you look at the, and the traditions are the same way. One leads right into the next one. You really can't do step 2 until you've done step 1, and there's a reason for that. You know, step 1 is in my opinion, being the only step that you have to take in its entirety, 100%. My sponsor tells me that still even today on a regular basis. Step one is the only step, and like I said, once again, this is only my opinion, the only step that we have to do 100%. And the other 11, I'm told that I can do them to the best of my ability at that given time. But step one, if I don't take step one in its entirety, 100%, painstakingly, with no reservation whatsoever, I don't believe I'll continue to have contented sobriety, or I'll acquire any contented sobriety. I've always seen steps one, two, and three as I can't, he can, so let him, or came to believe. Step one, like I said, identifies that there's a problem. Step two works toward a solution. That's realizing a power greater than me. And for me, that happens to be God. That can and will restore me to sanity. One definition that I've always heard about sanity is to be made whole. So I've always understood it that if I'm not sane, if I'm insane, then I'm not whole, I'm not complete. So to be made sane is to be made whole again, to be made complete. Step three is making that conscious decision to allow the solution to work in my life to help me get well. Very simply, this starts a process, it starts a journey. And I've always been told it's about the journey, it's not about the destination. It's about the journey that I'm on every single day. And in step three, this helps me identify that I'm not a bad person trying to get good, but a sick person trying to get well. And that's important for me to remember also, because for a lot of years, you know, I thought I wasn't worthy of God's love. I didn't think, you know, God could or would help me because of the bad person that I was. You know, when I came into these rooms and I found out so different, and I'll be forever grateful for that. So I need to remember that I'm not a bad person trying to get good. I'm a sick person trying to stay well, or get well, stay well. Step one deals with honesty and humility, which my sponsor and I talk about this all the time as well. Two tough things for an alky that's trying to dry up. Honesty and humility. I've been told that humility is not thinking less of myself, but thinking of myself less. The powerless for me is the mental obsession and the physical allergy. When I'm not drinking, I'm thinking about drinking. And when I am drinking, I'm fixated on keeping that glass full and keeping one in my hand. And keeping that buzz going, because that's what it's all about. Because once I start, I can't stop with just one or two. I don't know why, but I can't. And I always have that excuse to have just one more. You know, and I think of a lot of stories that I could go into. And one in particular, I got sober down in Florida, and I used to sit at the bar. I get out of work, and of course, a long story, but I lost my license, of course, due to DUIs and all that. But I would be sitting at the bar, and I'd be drinking a beer, and I'd be waiting for the bus to come to take me home. And I'd be sitting there drinking a beer, and I'd watch that bus go by. And I'd say, well, I got another hour, I'll catch the next one, you know. Might as well have another beer. And I'd have another beer or two, three, whatever. And pretty soon that next bus would go by. And that's the way it was. I always had that reason. I always had that excuse to have one more. And that, for me, that's the physical part. That's that physical allergy. That once I start, I can't stop. I can't. And I truly believe if I were to go out and pick up a drink today, I would be right back at it. I know. I've proved that. I've proved that to myself. I quit drinking at one time before I came in the rooms. And I went about 9 or 10 months without putting a drop of alcohol in my body. But I didn't do anything else other than that. You know, I continued to do all the old things and follow the old crowd and hang in the bars and shoot pool and drink Pepsi. And you know. It's like they say, hang in a barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut. And I did. I did, you know, and I was off and running. And once I was back at it, it was like I had never stopped, you know. Once I pick up one, I'm off and running. And that's the ism for me. The I, the self, and the me. Because nothing comes before that. Not my family, not my job, school. I drank myself out of school, college, business. I lost a business due to this disease. Not even my freedom. I've been in and out of jail a handful of times, all alcohol related, you know. And I don't even know if we realize that we lose our self-respect and our integrity and our self-worth, our self-pride. Don't know that I had much of it to begin with, but I'm sure I did. I was raised with that. I was taught right from wrong, you know. So step one is getting honest with me. To thine own self be true. I recognize there's a problem, but boy oh boy, for me in step one, more importantly, I have to accept that. You know, that's that fine print at the bottom of the step that you don't see. Is not only do I admit it, I have to accept it. And that's a tough thing. That was a tough thing for me to swallow. The unmanageability for me was a little bit easier in the end anyways, because by the time I came through the doors of AA, my life was just a total train wreck. You know, my life was falling apart all around me, and I knew it. I knew my life was unmanageable. The problem was I still struggled with the fact, you know, with the concept that I was powerless over alcohol. I really did. I didn't equate that. And until I realized that I didn't drink because I had all these problems, that I had all these problems because I drank too much, you know? And I really didn't look at it that way. And I can easily forget that. So it's important for me every single day to revisit steps 1, 2, and 3. And every single morning I do that. That's how I start my day off. I start my day reminding myself that I'm powerless, and that I know He can and will restore me to serenity. And then I recite the third step prayer, and I'm hoping I'm going to get this right. I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me from the bondage of self, so that I might better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them might bear witness, witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. And it's kind of funny, when I'm off by myself, I don't have a problem remembering that. But so every single morning, I need to remind myself of those three things. And I hope, until the end of time, I continue to do that. I've started my day that way for 30 years now, and I'm going to continue that. But like I said, you know, I have to be careful because I'm a quick forgetter. You know, and that pain and that hurt, and that humiliation and that remorse, that's the unmanageability. You know, one drink and it's all back. And I know that today, you know. And I need to, for step one for me, I need to always remember that. That if I pick that I'm only one drink away from a drunk like everybody else in this room. And all I need to do is pick up one and it's off and running. It's like they say, if not the engine, it's not the locomotive that kills you, it's the caboose. Or it's not the caboose, it's the engine. Sorry about that. One's too many and 100 isn't enough, you know. And that's the insanity that step two talks about, you know. To think that it'll be different this time. I have a disease that tells me I don't have a disease. Then it'll be different this time. And do the same things over and over and expect a different result. And you know how many times I've gone and said, you know, I'm going to stop and have a couple beers, shoot a game of pool, and then go home. And at 2 o'clock, I'm right back in the same jackpot, and I can't figure it out. You know, that's not what I intended to do. How many times I thought if I'd only do this, or if you know, if I don't drink whiskey, I won't get mean. And if I only drink canned beer instead of draft beer because it's not pasteurized, I won't get a hangover. You know, I tried to figure this thing out for a lot of years, you know, and I just couldn't do it. I hated being that way, you know. I was a mean drunk, and I hated that. I really did. And I knew that about myself. And then the next morning after, you know, time and again, I'm saying, I'm sorry, I won't do it again. I promise. I promise I won't do it again. You know, and I really meant that from the bottom of my heart. I meant that with all my being. The problem was I didn't know how not to do it again. Like I said, that shame and that remorse and that humiliation, man, it's second to none. That for me is the insanity of step two. It's the powerlessness. But the thing was, I was raised to fix things and take care of things myself. So that was tough for me to come, even with God. I still had a belief in God, you know, I always had the mentality I wasn't going to ask for help, that I can take care of this. I'll figure this out on my own. You know, the geographical moves. You know, packing up, actually in a drunken blackout, and headed south when, you know, my mindset was to move on and get this thing under control and get it all together again, because I couldn't ask for help. Even today, I still struggle with asking for help, to be honest with you. But the difference, I think, between steps one and two is the difference between getting sober and living sober. And there's a big difference between not drinking and living sober. For me, anyways. Big difference. Step one is admitting and accepting that I trusted my life to booze. And booze pretty much made all my decisions. And I was powerless to the booze. To start learning to live sober, I have to start trusting in something, a power outside of myself, because my best thinking got me, you know, in the jackpot that I was in. I want to mention real quick, nowhere, it says it a lot of times in this big book, but nowhere, at least in my belief, in my understanding, does it say that you have to believe in God. It mentions God a whole lot in this book. And I believe, that's my belief, but I don't tell anybody, you know, what they have to believe. And I know you need to find a higher power, a power greater than myself. You know, most alkies are defiant. Mark and I were just talking about this. So if you tell me I have to do something, guess what? You know, I'm not doing it. I'm doing the opposite, especially early on, not so much today, but early on, you know. So I've been fortunate to have sponsors that didn't tell me what to do. They showed me through their example. And they made pretty strong suggestions, but, you know, I'm a big believer that, like I said, the power of example is so much more important. If we keep the concept simple, we tend to accept spirituality more easily, I think. Plus, we stay all-inclusive. And it doesn't matter if you're male, female, black, white, gay, straight, Catholic, Jewish, atheist. Doesn't matter if you come from Park Avenue or a park bench. We all have one common denominator, and that's suffering. And that's what this thing's all about. You know, step one, we need to hit that bottom. We need to get to that point of realizing that last thing we lost or that next thing we're about to lose suddenly becomes more important than the next drink. And I've always been told that I should never look down on another suffering alcoholic unless it's to help him up. One thing I don't ever want to deny a practicing an alcoholic is his bottom. You know, I don't want to enable anybody and take that prize of the bottom away from them, because if I wouldn't have had mine, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. I truly believe that. Spiritual awareness keeps us centered on the fact that we aren't the center of the universe, that I didn't create all these problems and I don't have all the answers to fix them. And faith, sometimes it's just blind faith, but it gives me a peace and a comfort about Steve, about me. You know, I'm okay with me. And I've always believed in the same God. I still believe in that same God today. But today I have a different understanding. And it's what I've learned and what I've been given in these rooms. And to me, the God that I believe in today is still the same God that I was taught about when I was 5 years old. But I have a totally different understanding today. Step two, open my eyes and my heart to a different understanding. And it's my own personal relationship, with this God, with this higher power. And with spiritual awareness also comes a spiritual awakening. And the awakening for me is different than a spiritual experience. I've had a lot of spiritual experiences. I like to call them God things. And I don't believe in coincidence at all. I don't believe in coincidence anymore. I believe in God working my life through people and situations. But the awakening, for me anyways, wasn't... And the book talks about it. That for most people, it's not a real profound thing. It wasn't a bolt of lightning or a burning bush. Although that is what I looked for in the very beginning. You know, I really did. I had this crazy way I started to try to meditate when I was newly sober, and I really was waiting for, like, you know, the shrubs to catch on fire or something. It didn't happen. You know, for me it was more simple and it was gradual. And I don't know when it happened, but I know it did happen. And what happened was, the day finally came, and I'm not sure when it was, but when I realized that not only did I not have to drink, because you people told me that, I realized that I didn't want to. And you people showed me that. God showed me that through your actions and your examples. The willingness and try are really important. And my sponsor and I talk about this as well. That for any alky to be willing and to try to the best of its ability is all that can be expected. So those struggling to find a higher power just need to be willing and try, you know, to reach out for something. While the other 11 steps help us spiritually, step two is where we start developing a personal relationship with our own higher power as we understand it. I look to this higher power for guidance and to check my motives and my directions. Simply asking for help is the key. And the book talks about that as well. You know, the key to open the door is the willingness to ask for the help. I've always been told that pain is inevitable, but misery is optional. And you know, life still goes on, things are still going to happen. But today I have that feeling inside that no matter what happens, I'm going to be okay. And I really do. And I get that feeling from that personal relationship with a higher power, which started way back in step two. And I know that if I'm going through something, and there's some stuff going on in my life right now. So these three steps are really important in my life today. If I'm not okay with something, I'm just not through it yet. I truly believe that. Once I get through to the other side, I'm going to be okay. You know, I look back on... where I was, you know, before I came in these rooms, and the life that I was living and the things that were going on, and I look at my life today, and it's just amazing, you know. It just second to none. This also, step two also shows me that this is an inside job. I spent a lot of years trying to make everything look good on the outside so that you didn't know how I was doing on the inside. And you know, even in our house, I was raised, I was raised in a home of alcohol. And, you know, we didn't talk about any of that stuff. We didn't talk about our feelings. And nobody said they loved each other. And like I said, I was pretty much told, knock off the crying or I'll give you something to cry about. And, you know, if we had a problem, you just figured out how to fix it. So, you know, we did the same thing there. We did everything we could to make everything look okay on the outside so nobody knew what the heck was going on inside that house. And it was pretty crazy. But, you know, I myself as an individual, that's the way I live my life too. And it's been a lot of years, a lot of wasted time, you know, trying to make that okay. And only a higher power can change that and can make me whole again, you know, restore me to sanity, as step two talks about. And like I said, that was a definition I was told, that a definition of sanity is to be made whole. And in my belief that there's only one way to do that. There's only one way to fill that void, to fill that hole, and that's to a higher power. So, you know, I look to my higher power every day to keep me sane as possible and away from a drink for another day. Just one more day. That's all I ask for today. That's all I have. The big book tells me that. I'm given one day. Steps 1 and 2 require only acceptance, and now step 3 requires action. And I struggled with this step for a while. Sometimes I still struggle with it today. Because I couldn't understand in the beginning, I couldn't understand how I could physically, I thought I had to physically turn over or hand over something to something that I can't touch or see. And that's, you know, even though I have that belief, I have that faith, you know, I'm a touchy-feely kind of guy, and I gotta, you know, I gotta see it sometimes to believe it. So step 3 for me was a bit of a struggle. you know, willingness to try, once again, you know, they're the key. That's the action part of it. Making the decision, I guess, is the key. The key word. I remember in the beginning with my first sponsor, and I had a sponsor when I got sober down in Florida, and he was a third step thumper, and he was big on 1 2 3 1 2 3 1 2 3. You know, it was almost like he was teaching you to dance, and he was very big on gratitude. He pounded gratitude into my head, and his name was John, and John would always tell me, no matter what. You know, no matter what was going on, he would always say, well, you ought to be grateful. And I'd say, you know, I mean, a lot of things have happened to me in my sobriety that I really didn't think I had to be grateful for. And, you know, I mean, the only job I've ever been fired from, that was an early sobriety. It was only a couple months sober. But I realized today, once again, that the reason for that was God got me out of, I truly believe, my higher power, my God got me out of a situation and an environment that I probably wouldn't have been able to get away from on my own. And those were all the guys that I drank with and partied with that worked in that shop. And I got fired and I never saw any of them again. So, you know, when my sponsor said to me, you ought to be grateful, and I thought, you know, be grateful. What the heck can I be grateful for? And he said, you didn't drink, did you? And I'd say no. And he said, then you ought to be grateful. But, you know, this step, like I said, step 3, I have to practice this step pretty regularly every single day, all day long sometimes. And some days are easier than others, some days more than others. Sometimes, some days, you know, self-will just wants to control everything. And you know, I find myself, I was told early on also that I could start my day over at any time I wanted to. And that's simply through a third step. You know, when I start taking control and start taking things back, that's when I need to really refocus and find my higher power and regroup. And you know, in the beginning, the book tells me that I made a decision to turn over my alcohol problem to AA's principles. So I guess, you know, when I think about the simplicity of turning it over, you know, and I look at that, but then what about the rest of my life, you know? That's the problem. Actually, for me, and as far as step three goes, to turn my alcoholism and my drink problem over to AA is not a problem. You know, like I said, once I conformed to the fact and accepted the fact that there was a problem, and I decided to find a solution, which was steps one and two, to turn over my drink problem to you people was not a problem at all. What's a problem for me is the rest of my life. Like I said, to not drink is one thing, to live sober is something different. And this extends into my whole life. So acceptance and the serenity prayer helped me immensely. And I think they're tied right in with step three. Because nothing, absolutely nothing, happens in God's word by accident. I truly believe that, without any reservation. So if I can accept whatever's going on, it makes it a little bit easier. Or if not, I have to change it. You know, and that's where the serenity prayer comes in. The wisdom to know the difference. And that's probably, for me, the most important part of that prayer is the wisdom to know the difference. And, you know, to accept something doesn't mean I have to like it. Most things that I end up accepting, I don't like. And I just eat crow and I just accept it so, you know, time goes on. And I'm not real good, like I said, I'm not real good at that. I still struggle with turning things over and accepting, because usually what it is it's a control thing, and it's fear. You know, it's that fear of the unknown. If I could have God right next to me where Jerome is, man, I would have no fear whatsoever, you know, and I could accept absolutely anything. But even though my belief is, and I know that he's out there, that it's there, it's still not being able to see or touch. And I struggle with that. But like I said, the willingness and the try, as my sponsor always tells me, try to the best of your ability. That's the mainstay there. And staying in the moment also helps. Lately, this topic has been coming up at like every discussion group I'm at. But if I'm struggling with yesterday or planning tomorrow, then I'm missing out on the right now, which is all I really have. You know, usually, like I said, if I'm willing, if I'm trying to take my will back, it's because I'm trying to control a situation, or I'm full of fear of the unknown. The fear of the unknown gets me big time. And there's some things going on right now, like I said, in my life, and I'm projecting way into the future already. And I talked to my sponsor about it. And he says, is it happening right now? And I say, no. Then he said, why worry about it? And that's so true, because all I have is right now. And this is where I need to fall back on my faith and remember that no matter what happens, I'm going to be okay. And I do, and I need to tell myself that, and I truly do believe that. You know, you hear from people all the time that what was bothering me today, I probably won't remember in 2 weeks. So when I want to control and play God, I really need to think back at where I came from, like I said, and how my life was when I didn't want God's help, when I wasn't looking for God's help. The mess I made of things and the lives of other people, not even just myself, but a lot of other people. I screwed up a lot of lives. I screwed up a lot of things. And I look at where God has me today. And I look at things, you know, like I said, some of the things that I've gone through in my sobriety. And it just, I got through them. And I'm okay. And that's the most important thing. And I look around and I see other people struggling. And when I do, you know, I think right now, how can I not trust my will and my life to this power greater than me? How can I not, you know? Someone told me one time that we have all the power we need. We have God's will and we have God's power. All we have to do is ask for it. When I try to conform my will with God's and His intentions for me is when I prosper. I don't always know what God's will for me is, but I do know what it isn't. So, that's all I got. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. That was great. Really great. This is the part of the evening where we ask questions out here in the gallery and see if they have any questions for Steve. I have one. So, Steve, when I go up to Gateway, a treatment prison, there's a reoccurring thing in that room of those guys who say that whenever they get to many of them say, whenever they get to that third step, they go out. They can't deal with that third step. Have you heard that sort of thing? I don't know if you have.
I don't know if I specifically heard that, but I can relate to that. Like I said, I really struggle with the third step in early sobriety, and finally, what got me through that was one day, and I'm sure my sponsor said it a dozen times to me, but he said to me, the most important word in step three is decision. All you have to do is make a decision, you know. So I make that decision every single day now. Do I take it back? Yeah. But so I could see where, you know, that it's, in my opinion, step three is a really tough step. It's very humbling.
Do people have to do the first three steps to stay sober? Can they stay sober without those steps?
I don't think I could. I know, I honestly believe that step one for sure. I think anybody that has, I don't mean this in any disrespectful way at all, but I think anybody that's had a relapse or gone back out, I think it's because they simply did not do step one in its entirety. I believe that the other 11, 2 through 12, like I said, it's always been told to me that, you know, if I give it 85%, 90%, whatever, if I give it my best shot at that given time, that's okay. But I've always been told that step one, without any reservation whatsoever, has to be done 100% in its entirety. So that's what I believe.
Good.
Hi, Steve. So the second step, came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I struggled with that for a long time because I thought, how do you restore something that never was, because I never felt, you know, that I was ever the definition of that sanity. How can you restore that? How did you feel? You mentioned something that restoration is to be made whole. I heard that. What was your experience in finally thinking that you were made whole by doing these three steps?
For me, any struggle that I had with step two was kind of on the flip side of that, because I thought to myself, you know, I'm sometimes, and even early on, I was too much of an intellectual, but I thought, you know, I took the word insanity as like fighting words, you know what I mean? And once again, I don't mean to sound disrespectful in any way, but I thought, like, you're saying I'm crazy, you're saying I'm what? And really, in all actuality, I was. I mean, things that I did, you don't normally do, but I didn't see it that way. You know, and I wanted it, you know, it had to be a label, schizophrenic, you know, whatever. And I'm not real versed on mental health, so I'm not going to say too much more. But that was my problem, was with the insanity thing, was I didn't think I was insane, because, you know, I'd never been in a mental hospital. I'd never been clinically depressed, so that I know of. I didn't think I experienced any of that, so I thought, you know, I had to look at, and that's why I think I talked the most on probably step two tonight, because for me, the insanity now that I, as I look back and see it, was simply doing the same things over and expecting a different result. So for me, for God to take that away, and like I said, that definition that I was told, oh my gosh, way back when, I don't even know when it was, and it's always stuck with me, and I don't even know if it's true. I've never looked it up, to be honest with you, but somebody told me that to be made sane is to become sane, is to be made whole again. So, you know, to be complete. So I guess I looked at that as I wasn't complete, and I wasn't, you know. So, but I think for me, the label of insanity I struggled with, just the word, you know, but...
Steve, thank you so much for coming out. I'm curious, because we were all brought up to believe that the definition of an adult was self-sufficiency. So now in the program, how do you know, I think vis-a-vis the Serenity Prayer, where's the trigger where you give up doing it your way and turn it over? I mean, how do you... That's, for me,
I'm glad you asked me that, because I have to think about that, and you can ask my wife. A good example is just only about a year ago, I had a washing machine in my basement in a house I owned, and I needed to get that washer out of there. And so I went downstairs with an appliance dolly, and I got this washer on the dolly, and I got it over to the steps, and I got it up on the first landing, and I couldn't turn it, and I got pinned behind it, and I was struggling. I finally got the thing off, I got the dolly out of the way, and I thought to myself, you know, how am I going to do this? Well, instead of just picking up the phone and calling somebody and asking them for help, I rolled the washer, I rolled it up the stairs. Nice. Simply because that's what I do, even still today. I struggle with asking for help, whether it's in this. So for me, really, I'm a big believer that, just like in the beginning, until the suffering's bad enough, I'm not recommending it, but that's what it is for me. Usually it's until the... So when do I... Just whenever finally I just finally give up. And the funny thing was, about a half hour later, a young fellow that I sponsored came over to my house. And I knew he was coming over, but I still didn't wait. But that just, that old mentality. So, you know, I... Oh, no. Okay, thank you very much. Time is up.
It's along the same lines, because it's almost 7:30. So does that mean, is that why you never call the doctor when you're sick?
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks an awful lot, Steve. Beautiful job. Thank you.